Chapter 34. Kanlu swam over to them when they were on their way back to the seastead. He found them seated on benches inside a little wooden cabin at the back of Chiku's boat, which offered shelter from the sun.
"Thank you," she said.
Chiku Red added,
"Yes, thank you."
"I'm glad you came to the funeral,"
Kanlu said.
"We've never needed our friends more than we do now. Besides, Imekufiwa is very insistent that you be invited."
"It was good of him to think of us," Chiku said.
"He wanted you to attend the funeral, but that's not the only reason you are invited here."
Kanlu closed the door behind him and sat down on the bench opposite the two Chikus. His clothes were already dry, even though he had only left the water a few moments earlier.
"What now?"
Chiku asked.
"Yes," said Chiku Red.
"Why are we here?" "Let me make some chai,"
Kanlu declared. Kanlu produced a tea service from a wooden drawer at the back of the cabin, all the necessary provisions neatly laid out on a high-edged tray. He poured the water, which was already boiling, into three kelp-patterned cups. Chiku saw there was no point pressing him. He would speak when he was ready. But there was something on the tray that prickled Chiku's memory. It was a slim wooden box, like a pencil case.
"I've seen that before," she said.
She glanced at Chiku Red, but there was no recognition in her eyes.
"We drew lots from a box," she said finally. "It had the elephants in it, and the Samsung and the Ray-Bans, but it wasn't this box."
"No," Chiku said, agreeing, "but I've seen it before."
Kanlu passed around the cups of chai.
"It belonged to Mekufi, Chiku. I wanted you to have it." "Did he bequeath it to me in his will?" "Something like that. He thought about giving it to you much sooner than this, but the time was never right."
"Do you mind?" Chiku reached for the box, but refrained from touching it.
"Go ahead. It's yours to do with as you wish."
The box felt empty in her hands. She opened a little brass catch at one end and eased out a container, felt-lined, with a dozen square partitions. She could imagine keeping eggs in those partitions. Or eyeballs. She remembered now. It was a long time ago. A ridiculously long time ago. But she remembered.
"When Mekufi first came to me, in the café at the top of the Santa Justa elevator, he had this with him."
"What is it?"
Chiku Red asked.
"There were motes in it. 12 of them, I suppose. He took out one and gave it to me."
Chiku Red, lacking access to the org, had no recent experience of the emotional transfer of a mote, but she understood the concept well enough. She knew that each mote contained a cargo of pre-packaged emotions, formulated in a state of zen-like concentration by the sender and tagged for a specific recipient, then locked away in glass perpetuity until the moment of their release. She wondered why the world needed motes. Surely words and faces were enough. There were two motes left in the box, nestled within the final pair of compartments, and only visible when the compartment had been slid to the limit of its travel. One was a milky, featureless white. The other was a kind of purple-flecked black.
"My memory might be playing tricks," she said, "but I could swear the black one was in the box that day. It stood out. It was the only black one. What does it mean?" "Mekufi gave me one other instruction in addition to ensuring that you acquired the box."
She gave her son a sharper look than she had intended.
Which was?
The white moat is for you. Do nothing with the black moat until you've experienced the white. He was most insistent.
Imekufi formulated this before he died.
A long time before. I think he renewed the formulation several times over the years, but, as I said, the time was never quite right for him to give it to you.
And him dying makes it right?
I suppose so,
Kanu said.
Look, I'm just the messenger here. I really don't know what this is all about.
Really?
Chiku asked, hoping that her son detected her skepticism.
I suppose I can make an educated guess, especially in light of our conversation yesterday, what you were saying about...
But Kanu caught himself, and they both smiled at his nearly having mentioned Arachne.
Look, and the business at the household as well? Anything more specific than that, though, is between you and the late Mekufi.
Chiku pinched the white mote between her fingers. She held it for a few moments, then put it back in its compartment. She did not touch the black mote at all. She closed the box.
Did he say when I was supposed to open the white mote?
No, just that it's vital you should open the white one first.
You should open it now, Chiku Red told her. Now that she knew what was inside the box, it felt heavier in her hand somehow, gravid with latent possibility. It was 50 years since she first met Mekufi in the Santa Justa elevator. If she was right about the black moat, it was at least that old. If it was meant for her, why had he not just given it to her at the time?
I'm not sure, she said to her sibling.
You should open it now, Chiku Red repeated. I cannot open it for you. The two women went out on deck. They were on the sailing ship now, bound for Lisbon. The wind was stiffer, the waves an iron grey. The novelty of sailing had worn off some time ago, and Chiku wanted to be back home. She had the box in her pocket. She could feel its hard wooden edges against her thigh. The black mote was still inside it, but the white was in her hand again. She held it up to the horizon's grey indeterminacy. Its milky interior offered hints of structure. It reminded her of the clouds of Venus.
Why would he do this, Chiku Red?
I have no idea, Chiku Yellow, but I think it's time for you to find out.
I'm frightened. I know it's just a packet of emotions, so what harm can it do me? I keep telling myself that. But I'm still frightened.
I am with you, said Chiku Red.
You have no idea what this feels like.
You have no idea what being me feels like.
Open the moat.
Chiku steeled herself. She took a breath, squared her shoulders, lifted her chin. She thought of Travertine defying the assembly. Travertine would never have quailed at a moment like this. Travertine would have opened the moat in a heartbeat. She pinched her fingers. The glass resisted more than usual, so she squeezed harder. The moat shattered, its white innards boiling out like smoke. The glassy pieces fell to the deck and self-annihilated. She waited.
Well? Asked Chiku Red. I'm not getting anything. Nothing I recognize anyway.
But she signaled her sibling into silence. Some moats were obvious, the equivalent of cheap perfumery. Others were much more subtle. They carried a delicate and reticent emotional freight, one that needed space and silence in which to declare itself. She was giving it space and silence now. Still, there was nothing. I think it's a dud, she said. Contents must have expired. Or may Kufi botch the assignation tag somehow. This is what would happen if you tried opening a moat. I do not think Mekufi would have made a mistake, Chiku Red answered, in her too formal Portuguese. Her arms were crossed, and she was watching her sister with skeptical detachment.
No, he probably wouldn't, but why am I not?
A voice cut across her own.
Hello, Chiku. It's good that we've found each other again.
It was Mekufi, of course, or rather a figment of Mekufi, floating a few paces nearer to the bow, hovering in the air as if submerged in water. He wore no exo, and his arms and tail parts moved languidly. I can see him now, she said to Chiku Red. I'm looking at a figment of Mekufi, and he's talking to me. Then perhaps you should listen? Chiku Red suggested. It was excellent advice. This was a very unusual figment. Figments generally arrived via the org. They were traceable, generated remotely, linked to watertight tags and hypersecure quangled ching binds. This figment had come in via a moat, something Chiku had never heard of before.
You have broken the moat. And now we are in contact. Might I ask for your attention? As is the nature of these things, I have no interactivity. You can't ask me anything, and I won't be at liberty to repeat anything that you are about to hear.
Chiku nodded, even as she recognized the gesture had no currency.
I had two options. I could speak to you privately while I was still alive, in a safe place of my own choosing, or I could commit the contents of this message to a specially doctored moat and trust that it would reach you in safe order. I confess, I spent some considerable time unsure how best to proceed. Here I am, though. A path has been chosen, for better or worse.
What is he saying?
Chiku Red asked.
Shh, said Chiku Yellow.
You've broken the white moat, and now only the black moat remains. I trust that the black moat is also now in your possession? Like the white moat, its contents are somewhat unconventional.
Mekufi smiled.
Also dangerous. More dangerous than you can presently imagine. A time might come when it will be advantageous to you to break the black moat. But you should be absolutely certain that the moment is right.
Chiku could not contain herself.
And how will I know? By my reckoning, the holoships will arrive at Crucible somewhere around 24:35. We won't know the exact circumstances of their arrival until long after it has happened. If there is a propulsion breakthrough, they may arrive many months sooner. If there is a catastrophe, they may not arrive at all. But whatever happens, we can expect some sort of news. Allowing for a time lag, it should reach us somewhere around 24:63, almost half a century from now. Nearly as long again as the time since we first met. Even to those of us accustomed to the modern lifespan, it still feels like a very remote event. A date of no consequence to the here and now. But make no mistake. When news of the providers reaches Earth, everything will change. The truth may break in installments or in one great wave, but the consequences will be the same either way. The billions of people living in this system will learn that the mechanism has been contaminated, that there is something inside that should not be there, and the thing inside the mechanism is capable of murdering to protect itself.
Chiku nodded. They had spoken of this often enough, during her time away from Earth, in the company of June and Kwame and Lin Wei. But to know of a fearful thing was worse than not knowing, when you had no armor against it.
It could go several ways, McCoofy continued. Aware that her existence is about to be revealed, Arachne might take decisive preemptive action by attempting to neutralize and incapacitate millions via direct manipulation of the mechanism and the org before the information arrives. But given that she knows the news from Crucible will soon be on its way to Earth, why hasn't she acted already? The answer, I believe, is that she's insufficiently confident of success, nor can she be certain of the specifics of the news from Crucible. Perhaps her existence won't be disclosed after all. Perhaps she hopes to continue hiding, haunting the mech. I think that is her preferred strategy. But the slightest whiff of irregularities in the mech will have Cognition Police and mech invigilators scrambling to verify what we already know. They will return to Ocular. As well as they are able, they will re-examine the accident on Venus, and they will conclude that a rogue artificial intelligence might be loose in the mech. Once they have reached that conclusion, they will begin to deploy containment protocols. They will try to back Arachne into a corner, and that is when she is most likely to retaliate. It could be very bad for us all, Chiku. But until that day comes, we can't really know for sure how this will play out. The aftershocks may be bearable for the peoples of the United Aquatic Nations. We have reduced our reliance on the mech and the org almost to zero. But we still share our world with the Drylanders and the Skylanders, and all of us are linked via interdependencies too complex to unravel in a hurry. We too may fall foul of Arachne's retaliation, which brings me to the Black Moat.
Again, Chiku felt the edged presence of the wooden box against her thigh. She would have to get used to it. She had a feeling that it would not be leaving her possession any time soon.
The Black Moat is a countermeasure. Unlike the White Moat, it's keyed directly into the org and the mech. If you open it, certain events will follow in swift succession. Deep in the architecture of the mech is a flaw. Consider it a vulnerability, or perhaps a deliberately engineered weakness. It has been there since the mech's inception, during the resource and relocation years, but its existence has never been known to more than a handful of souls. We know of it.
Chiku shivered, sensing what was coming.
The Black Moat will speak to this flaw, McCoofy said. It will cause it to fail, and in failing, trigger another failure mode, and another, one after another, the pieces will fall, the mech will cease to function, the org will also be taken down in the same cascade of failures. What I cannot predict is the ultimate extent or severity of these failures. In the best-case scenario, the mech and the org will weaken to the point where Arachne is disadvantaged, unable to act or protect herself, but not precipitates significant human inconvenience. I hardly dare speculate about the worst-case scenario. We have made some collective mistakes as a species, it's true. We invested too much power in things we can't see, let alone control. But look at the world we have, Chiku. For all its failings, things could be a great deal worse. No one's died in any wars lately, or been murdered, or left to rot in a prison, or been denied the basic allocation of fresh food and drinking water. No one's been tortured for their beliefs, or made to feel like a pariah because of their sexual preferences. Yes, we've also put ourselves in something of a bind. And exactly how much of a bind, we'll find out in about half a century.
McCoofy's figment smiled fondly, the way cherubs look down from medieval heavens.
Well, some of us will. I'm afraid I've rather abdicated my responsibilities in that regard by virtue of being dead. How reckless of me. But I have every hope that you won't fall back on the same excuse. The Black Moat is your responsibility, Chiku. There's only the one, and now it's yours. If you ever deem that the moment is right and decide to use it, that weight will be yours and yours alone to bear. I have faith in you, though. I've had faith in you for a very long time. Now, take care of yourself, take extra care of the moat, and wait for the news from Crucible. And in the meantime, keep trying to enjoy life. You've done very well with Chiku Red. We all have tremendous hopes for her.
The figment vanished. She stood for long moments, unable to speak or move. The catamaran raced on, kissing the wave tops. The sails made an eager drumming sound. The box was still hard against her thigh. She thought of the black moat inside it, visualizing it now, not as a little glass sphere, but as a kind of void, a hole into which a world could fall. 48 years. A little more, a little less. They would have a better idea as the holoships made their final approach. Or rather, when news of that final approach crawled its way back to Earth. There would never be much warning. She thought of Chiku Green, still out there. In that moment, the last lingering traces of the resentment she had long felt towards her remote sibling evaporated, boiled away like the white smoke in Mekufi's first moat. She wanted Chiku Green to know that she was here, that there was something she could do, if the very worst eventuality came to pass. She wanted Chiku Green to know they were in it together. She wanted to know how Chiku Green was doing. There was a presence at her side. Chiku Red, taking her hand, steadying her, as if she had been about to topple into the waves, which on balance wasn't entirely out of the question. What did it say? Long story, Chiku said, debating how much to say to her sister. But Kano had said they were safe from Arachne aboard the catamaran. There would never be a better time for the telling. I think you and I are going to have to take unusually good care of each other, at least for the next 50 years or so. Do you think we're up to it?
We can try,
Chiku Red answered. We can, Chiku Yellow agreed. That's all we can ever do. And the sailing ship beat its way back to Estoril.